This is Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, broadcasted on WFHB. We air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for some more.
Welcome to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced by Indiana University's Asian Culture Center in collaboration with WFHB. Today's episode is in honor of all the students who are graduating. To the class of 2022, congratulations. We know you have been waiting for this special day for IU Bloomington. It's this Saturday. You have worked so hard to earn your degree, and we know that it has not been easy the last 2 years living and studying in this current environment where uncertainty is in the air as we continue to live in this pandemic. That's why we are really proud at the Asian Culture Center and the Hereabouts radio team. We're very happy that you have made it. And it's just going to be in a few days that you are going to be up there on the stage receiving your diploma. We know that your parents, loved ones, friends, and classmates are all rooting for you. Whether you have specific plans or activities in mind after graduation, we hope that you will allow yourself to enjoy the moment. So today, I wanted to use this time, by the way, my name is Melanie. And today, though, we want to use this time for us to get to know one of our student assistants and who will be joining the commencement on Saturday, my co-producer, Andy Pace. Andy is the outgoing graduate supervisor at Indiana University Residential Programs and Services in Bloomington. And on top of that busy job, Andy has been our co-producer at Hereabouts since October 2020. Honestly, it's a bittersweet feeling for personally for me and for the ACC because Andy is moving on. Moving on, meaning we were happy that you're graduating, Andy, but we're also sad that we're going to lose you. Yeah. So how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Melanie. And I'm very honored to be featured on, I guess, this last episode of this quote-unquote season.
I don't want to say last episode. I hope that you will come back and do a special episode for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So maybe the last episode for now. But I'm also feeling it's, you know, very bittersweet. But I'm doing good. You know, I'm excited to be moving on. But, you know, I think it has hit me this week, especially more than the last few weeks, because, you know, probably many people can relate, but you're just so busy with trying to do finals and figure out job stuff and moving stuff. And now it's just like that stuff is kind of passed. It's like, oh, I got to say goodbye to people for now. And, so it is really bittersweet. But
yeah. It's a time of the year where you have to, I guess, find a sublet for your, yeah. for your place, or you're not subletting because you do get a free housing as a graduate student supervisor at the RPS. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that is correct. So fortunately, I don't have to add that stuff. I know some friends who are trying to like find someone for the summer and just trying to, they don't want to pay rent in two places at once. So.
And Andy, you are graduating this Saturday or Friday for the school at the School of Education with a degree in Master's in Higher Education and Student Affairs. Is that correct?
Yep, that is correct.
So with that full load of academic work and also working as a graduate supervisor, how did you find us? How did you get involved with Hereabouts?
Yeah, that's a great question because I'm trying to, like, the past 2 years have also just been a blur of so many different experiences. I'm trying to pinpoint when I found Hereabouts. I first found the Asian Culture Center before I even moved to Bloomington. This was like the summer of 2020, right before I was coming here. And I remember that I wanted to get plugged into a community that was outside of my master's program just to, I think, gain that additional experience and then also a community that I identified with, myself being Korean American. And I found the Asian Culture Center. And I think when I was on their website, I found Hereabouts, you know, and I was like, interesting radio show or podcast. And then I remember I attended the first volunteer orientation, which was, I think maybe August, probably around August of 2020.
Yeah.
And then I heard about Hereabouts. And then what really did it for me was this, and this was all on Zoom, like, you know, we like nothing was in person at this time. But we had this Zoom session with, I think, people, the Hereabouts team of that school year. And also, I think James Boo, who works at Self-Evident Radio.
Yes.
And I think one of the other staff members, they're talking about, you know, recording a radio show, but using Zoom to do it because, you know, like with the pandemic and
right.
with stations being closed. And I thought that was just really fascinating. And I didn't have any at zero like podcast or radio show experience. So I was just like, I'd like to get plugged into it. And I never would have thought that, you know, my experience and what I learned would have happened after that moment.
Oh, you're great. I mean, I don't think we would have sustained Hereabouts up to this time without your contributions. So we're really grateful that you have put in a lot of effort and time to making sure that we have an episode. It's not easy, but I'm having a fun time doing this with you, and I'm gonna miss that. You're not from the Midwest, you're from the West Coast. So mm-hmm. when you were saying you were looking up the Asian Culture Center website before you came here, why, I'm always curious, why do people from the West Coast would like to move or study in the Midwest? And what got you to, I mean, aside from the excellent programs that we have here, well, why did you choose to come to IU Bloomington?
Yeah,
I'd like to say that you came for the ACC, but
actually, that was actually a big part. I found the ACC after I committed to IU Bloomington, which I think sealed the deal for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I did. I think originally what drew me to IU Bloomington was I actually already had some affinity for both IU and Bloomington long before I even thought of it as a place to go to school. Both my aunt and my uncle used to work here at IU Bloomington. My aunt used to work in the dean's office for the College of Arts and Sciences, and my uncle did various jobs throughout. And then his last job before he retired was with the Substance Use and Intervention Services Office. And they also lived in Bloomington. And I think just growing up and visiting them all the time, you know, campus is just around the corner from where they live. And I was also used to visiting campus because, you know, when they were working there. And that was a very big part of it. And I think knowing that I'd be moving, especially during such uncertain times, you know, just being relatively close to family and was a very big, very big factor. But oh yeah, the program itself was a big draw as well. The higher education program is like very well known, and also I think the graduate assistantship that I received, the benefits of, you know, the housing and the financial assistance for tuition was also a very big draw. So I think all those things kind of came together. But yeah, definitely being familiar with Bloomington and being able to move here, and while having to adjust to the place, it was also kind of like, oh, I know this place, you know, this is where I kind of hung out when I was like a little kid. So yeah,
that's really great to know. I'm writing down some notes because I really think there is something to you know, reaching out to doing some, you know, recruitment when we speak to especially for communities of color. There is so much to say something about, you know, pre-college outreach and getting familiar with the environment even before you come in here to decide to study for 4 years or maybe do grad school. But I'm writing down notes because I know we have really good friends at the enrollment services, and they do this wonderful job of reaching out to communities of color. And yeah. What would you consider, Andy, your memorable or something that you would consider really the highlight of working in your position at the RPS as a graduate student supervisor. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely. So, gosh, I have so many memories because, you know, I think working in that position, and just to give some context, like my job with RPS was to supervise the resident assistants or RAs who do a lot of the both the education work and also the like the safety and emergency response work in the residence halls here. And I myself was not an RA in undergrad. So last school year, there was just a huge learning curve, learning about, you know, what the housing, like campus housing, like environment is like, and dealing with all the challenges. We definitely dealt with a lot of challenges, especially as a result of COVID, you know, with, you know, so many things, just making sure that people were safe and also just like navigating all the restrictions, which, you know, made it very difficult to unfortunately like build like relationships with residents or the people living in the residence halls. But I think memorable experience, I don't really have like one specific standout experience, but I do say that having like being able, the team that I worked with both like last year and this year have just been very fantastic. And I think for me, it was really just, you know, going through all the ups and downs with them and learning about their own, you know, personal like stories, like where they came from, like what they're majoring in, where they want to go. That is like really what drew me into like studying this field. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a culmination of like, you know, when you have those one-on-one meetings and you hear from them about like, hey, I talked with this one of my students who lives on my floor and they were going through this, but I talked to him about this resource, or I provided them with this, maybe this guidance, and, you know, just kind of seeing them like respond and be supportive. I think it gives you a lot of encouragement, because a lot of the, you know, I think there's a lot out there that says that, you know, we should be discouraged about, you know, this, like what's going to happen in the future. But on the very micro scale, like when you hear about all the cool things that the student staff that you work with are doing, it's just like, oh, that's very really nice. And they're very smart too. So
very smart. And you're in a company of, you know, your job is really 100% student facing.
It is, yeah.
And supervising RAs who deal with students also. When I say deal, but almost like you're part of a larger community or a family. And
absolutely.
And I'm sure there are challenges, and also there are highlights of, you know, fun stuff going on.
Yeah.
And in this program at the Hereabouts, anything that stood out for you?
Yeah, gosh.
other than the two of us like cramming for, oh my gosh, we need to come up with guided questions right now.
Yeah. And those times were fun too, even though sometimes stressful, but it's just like, you know, I feel like a lot of the best creativity comes at the last minute. I don't recommend applying that to classes. So.
I would not recommend that either, but I feel like sometimes when I work on deadlines. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the two of us, and that's why I'm going to miss you, because, you know, we kind of like hit it off in terms of, okay, so this is our theme. We do a little research and then we then dive in into our 30-minute recording. So for those of you who are listening right now, Andy and I have been recording our podcast via Zoom, which everybody's doing at the moment because, you know, but it works well, actually. Yeah. If for some reason our reception is not as good, you can write to us and say, Melanie, speak closer to the microphone or keep your distance away from the microphone. Anyway, Andy, last week at the Asian Culture Center end of the year recognition ceremony, you mentioned in your graduation remarks how connecting with your Asian roots has made an impact in your identity as a Korean American adoptee. I guess my question is, and if you feel comfortable sharing, and please you can say, let's skip that question. But if you feel comfortable talking about it, could you expound on that, what you meant by that?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question, because I think, so growing up, I grew up in, since I was adopted, Like half of my or my half of my family, it comes from the Midwest, you know, actually here in Indiana, you know, background. And my mom's side comes from the West Coast. So I always kind of felt like I had, and my mom's family is kind of like a mixture of both like Korean American and Hawaiian, and my dad's family is white. So we had kind of like a mixture. I grew up with like a mixture of different cultures, and you know, and I think it was interesting because, you know, I look Korean American. I got some of that experience, but especially when I went to undergrad at the University of Washington. It was where there is a large Asian and Asian American population there in the Seattle area. You know, I sometimes felt like I kind of related to their cultural experiences, but also not entirely because, you know, I didn't learn, you know, I didn't grow up with like learning Korean and a lot of those traditions. And so I think in undergrad, especially, I was like, oh, what am I? Because, you know, I joined like the Korean Student Association or like, you know, other like Asian American student orgs, and I'd be like, this is great. And the people are great and the food is amazing, of course, but you know, it's just like, who am I? And so when I was coming to grad school, and I took a few years off after undergrad, so I was, you know, a little bit older, and I had some time to kind of just like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm just Andy, you know.
Yeah.
But there's still a part of me, I was like, dang, I kind of wish that I could dig a little bit deeper into that, you know. And I think so it's a kind of like the sense of like curiosity, you know, just like, you know, I like, if I grew up one way, but I look a different way, then who am I, sort of thing. But I learned a lot, especially, you know, it's like having the opportunity to talk to the other like people who were adopted. And I think hearing their experiences and kind of talking about those similar experiences, I was like, oh, okay, this is, you know, it's not just me who's like feeling that way about identity. You know, it's like, it's just kind of like a product of, you know, being raised in different environments all at once. And so yeah, I'm not sure if I answered your question, but you know, yeah, I think I just kind of came in with that sense of curiosity, and I was like, you know, identity is like this very complex and sometimes I guess ambiguous thing that always changes too. So it's right. Like sometimes it's like, am I just discovering something that's always been there, or am I just continuing to develop? And I think the last thing I'll add for this is like, especially over the last 2 years and, you know, working with the ACC, I learned that it's a mixture of both. But I think for me, it's like, it was a process of developing that aspect of my identity, which was there, but I never really kind of like focused on it until now.
Right. And that process is always, doesn't have an ending, and that's why it's called the word process, right?
Absolutely.
It seems like it's a continuum. And I in one of the classes in the class that I taught on Asian American and Pacific Islander communities, we touch on adoption, and we learned that there are so many questions that Korean American adoptees wrestle growing up. Some have found some answers, others found some answers very elusive.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, was there ever a time for those kind of experiences in your life? And if, how did you confront those questions?
Yeah, it's, I think it as you mentioned, it's like always an ongoing process, you know. I think the types of questions, for me at least, kind of changed based on where I was in life, you know, when you and I think this is an experience that many people can identify with, but you know, like when you're young and in elementary school, you know, you might get the question of like, you know, so are you from China, or, you know, where you're, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Right. Or do you speak Chinese? I remember getting that a lot in elementary, I think even up through high school, that sort of thing. And then, so I was like, kind of that question, it's just like, well, like, no, you know,
right.
You know, it's like I live just down the street, and you know, I'm just like, I've been in the United States almost my entire life, you know, that sort of thing. And so kind of like those who am I questions kind of can emerge from that.
Right.
I think in college those questions kind of shifted a little bit to, I think there a lot of it's just like, who am I, but it was just like, because I can't relate entirely to maybe Korean Americans, my Korean American friends, you know, or their, mm-hmm. like their traditions. So I think a lot of those who am I questions emerge from that as well. And, you know, I think as I get older, the question sometimes I think has morphed into like, what do I want to become? You know, do I want to really focus on continuing to develop my Korean American identity and engaging in those like communities, or do I just kind of mm-hmm. want to be like, that was, you know, I just kind of want to do my own thing. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. just like my ethnicity is just, you know, just my ethnicity. And so I think as an adoptee, I think, because you're not always surrounded by those people and getting all those messages, I think those questions can kind of emerge, but they kind of change over time.
Yes. And I think the level of comfortability with the issue of identity really also depends on where you are in your stage of your life. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for, I know we've worked before when the Asian Culture Center has worked before with a local group with families with adoptees from Asia. Do you have suggestions for families with adoptees from Asia and for those who continue to search for some answers? What would you tell them?
Yeah, that's a good question. Another really great question. I would say, I think for families, especially for families who maybe have just recently adopted or have like a young child, you know, is to, I think the identity, the questions and the process of understanding your identity as an adoptee is something that I think most, if not all, adoptees go through in some form. So I feel like, and this is kind of just like my hunch maybe, but, you know, based on my experience and watching documentaries on it too, some families are, it's a stressful experience for families too, because they can't relate to what their child is kind of going through, those sort of questions of like, where am I? Who am I? Where did I come from? That sort of thing. But I think, you know, the most that, you know, families can do is, you know, it sounds pretty simple, but it's powerful. It's, you know, just to continue to listen, you know, and validate that, like, hey, you have a very unique experience, you know, and just like, what can I do to maybe, you know, help you out? Or maybe, or what are some groups or organizations that we can connect to that, you know, that can assist in your developmental journey or your questions. I also think for families too, just kind of like learning about like the culture of the where their child like was born or came from, regardless of if they came from that culture when they were like 3 months old or 9 months old, like I was, or 9 years old, you know, that's huge. Yeah. And so, yeah. And I think for the adoptees themselves, it varies so much because everyone has so many varied experiences, but just that the questions are normal, and there's just like, there's nothing wrong with you for having those questions. You know, I think that's something that I kind of had to accept over time, was just that, you know, like there's going to be times where you just kind of feel out of place, but that's just because, you know, you have that very unique experience and there's nothing wrong with you as a person. But also on top of that, if you can connect with groups or organizations, I think whether in college or, you know, in the community, like adoptee organizations, I think that can be very beneficial too.
I really appreciate your answers on that one. And, you know, while you were responding to that, I came up with an acronym, and this is based from what you said. Mm-hmm. You said something about listening, mm-hmm. You know, be open to what your child or, you know, what parents are going through. So that's L-O. And then this is really corny, but, and then you said something about validate. And so that's V. And then, and letter E for engage your family with whatever organizations that are there to support you and your family. So, okay, I'm really corny here and it all spells love, but anyway.
Well, I love it. That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's easy to remember.
Yeah.
But I'm going to shift here, Andy, just because we are almost out of time. But thank you for sharing that. And one last question for those, because I'm always amazed about how you balance your academic work and working for Hereabouts and also as a supervisor for the graduate as a graduate student supervisor in the RPS, how do you, for those wishing to do extracurricular activities as an undergrad or as a grad student, what advice would you give?
Yeah, advice. I think the first one is, I'm kind of laughing because sometimes like it's really easy to take on so much and just like, oh no, I regret that so much, you know? And they say like, you know, make sure you balance everything, but balancing is like, for me at least, it's a process of trial and error, you know? So I think, so first of all, just like making sure that if you're feeling like you don't have any time to like just chill or be yourself, and this goes for both undergrad and grad school, I kind of like look at like the things that you might need to like set aside for a little bit, you know? And I think college is a good time to kind of do that. But I would say with extracurriculars, and I think this really especially applies for like the first 2 years of undergrad, you know, it's just like, just try different things and explore. And, you know, I think that's what I did. And, you know, that's how I actually found like the activities that eventually encouraged me to apply to my current master's program, which was mm-hmm. like, you know, doing education for, or like kind of like peer mentorship education. But, you know, just try different things, whether it's like something that's related to your academic major or your interests, or even just something for fun, you know, like even just those like fun, like the peanut butter and jelly sandwich clubs, that was a thing at my school. You know, you meet just a lot of cool people through there, and you can also just build connections and find kind of like funny enough, like opportunities through those people. So I think that's one of them. And I think for grad school, I remember coming into grad school kind of thinking like, all right, I'm only here for 2 years. I'm just going to focus on like professional and career stuff and all of that. And while I think grad school, that's what's intended to do, you know, if you have the opportunity to maybe like join like an organization that, or a club that is outside of your, you know, your master's or your doctorate program, I found that just to be just really great because, you know, like you're really focusing on that stuff just so much out of the day. And just for me, like the ACC and hereabouts and, you know, all the people I met through the ACC, sometimes it would just give me just that kind of breath of fresh air, you know, and just like give me a different perspective other than textbooks. So that's what I would say. Like in grad school, that exploration process is still there. And I'd say, you know, just try new things even in grad school, you know.
Thank you. Andy Pace, we're going to miss you. On behalf of the Asian Culture Center and Hereabouts team, congratulations and best wishes for a happy and successful years ahead. And to all the graduates, congratulations to you as well and your loved ones. Be well and stay tuned for more of Hereabouts in the coming weeks. Take care.
Thank you so much, Melanie, and thank you everyone for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, broadcasted on WFHB. Again, we air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for some more. See you next week.